I just knew that I was supposed to sing, and I was supposed to share my voice, and just like all of us. And I think God is going to keep nagging, and your soul is going to keep coming to the surface until you figure out how it is you're supposed to share what it is you're supposed to share with the world.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 402, wherein we talk to Andrea Forsyth, or Forsyth. You know what? I'm 99% sure that it is Forsyth. I'll ask her in a minute. She is an entertainer. Anticipate us to probably get singing at some point. She's an actress, a singer, a healer. Welcome in, Andrea. And it is Forsyth, correct?
Forsyth, yeah, with an E at the end.
Yeah. How English of you?
Well, that's my husband's side, right? So
how English of him?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Now, to let the curtain go beyond what this show is, Andrea and I, for the first time, are chatting today. We recently became social media friends after I saw that you were friends with most everyone that I'm friends with on social media and went, yeah, we should be friends. We'll see what this does.
Yeah, exactly. Same here.
So welcome in. Have you ever listened to an episode of the Cultural Hall before?
Yes, I love it.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. Have you heard of it before we became social media friends?
No, I hadn't.
Okay. Well,
sorry.
I mean, I'll hold that against you, but only in the invasive, personally scoping questions that I ask you today.
Okay.
So, before we started chatting with the record button on, you were asking me various questions as far as to labeling what the Cultural Hall is. So I'm going to turn the table on you and ask you to label yourself. I said entertainer, singer, and actress. What else? What other labels do you wear?
So I am a motivational singer currently.
Okay, so I've heard a motivational speaker. You're going to immediately need to break down what on earth a motivational singer is.
Yeah, I totally made it up. I'm a singer.
Okay.
And I also teach meditation classes.
Okay.
And one day with my crazy brain, I was like, hey, why don't I just combine the two of these and see what happens?
Okay.
So I just sing all the songs that I love and that inspire me and I know inspire my audiences. And then I intermix, messages of how to find joy and how to find peace and kind of my journey, in finding joy and peace and healing in my life.
Okay. So it's a little more, deep than what I immediately, when you said motivational singer, came to my mind. I was like, well, the Wells Fargo wagon is, and I'm like, yeah, I'm motivated. And then, you know.
No, more spiritually, more inner motivation, more.
Like, put your shoulder to the wheel, like a lounge singing push along.
Yeah,
got
exactly.
It. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
I love that you just made up a term and we're like, yeah, this. I'll be
yeah,
this.
Yeah, totally.
Thing.
I have no idea. And I looked online. I think I'm the only one out there. I think there's somebody else that does something totally different, but has a motivational singer, but. I'm just going to stick with it and see what happens.
So for the sake of this, we'll say a pioneer in your industry.
Definitely a pioneer. Yeah, definitely a pioneer.
So I want to get into that a little bit more. So let's bookmark that and let's get to know you a little bit. You are a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
For sure.
Born and raised? Convert.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, born and raised.
How far do the not Forsyths go back?
Well, my mom was a convert, and my dad had Pioneer stock.
Okay. How did mom find the church?
In Canada.
Okay.
She's a convert from Canada.
Just picked it up, was like, hey, Canada, what's up?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there were some missionaries that were really cute on the street, and she started flirting with them, and one thing led to the next, and she was Mormon, so.
Yeah. What is this? What have I done? I'm Mormon now.
Yeah.
Stop real quick. It's interesting that within the church we say don't flirt to convert, but like I've heard so many stories, like I almost think that we should sort of pivot away from that don't flirt to convert and just embrace it.
Well, you might as well, right? Mm-hmm. They're what, 19-year-old boys?
Yeah. 18,
you know, like, just use, you know, like I mean, one of my messages is, you know, use the skills that you have.
Yeah.
And as a 19-year-old boy and a girl, like, what better skills do you have than flirting, right?
Right. Yeah. You don't know necessarily the gospel, but you know where you want to be. And you go, hey, I'm young, I'm available. How about build a life with me? We'll figure the rest out. Sure.
Exactly.
I'm on board. Let's do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm grateful for the flirting powers that the missionaries had in Manitoba, Canada. So. Yeah.
Well, the Manitoba flirting is, I mean, it's incomparable.
It's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that's a whole different podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
So born and raised then where?
In Utah County in Highland Alpine area.
Okay. Met your husband. I'm going to go out on a limb here. BYU.
Well, I'm a real big rebel. Actually, he's the rebel. Mm-hmm. I was going to BYU, and he went to the U at the time.
Oh my gosh, star-crossed lovers! How does an individual attending BYU meet someone that's going to that other university?
Well, he was at the only BYU game I have ever attended as an adult.
Okay, all right.
And he's a sports lover, so. He was there. He actually has lots of friends that went to BYU. So he was randomly there and I was randomly there. Like I said, I haven't been to a BYU game since.
Uh-huh.
But luckily I went to that one.
But was it random?
No, it definitely was not random. It was love at first sight.
Really?
For sure.
Really?
It's weird. I mean, it's weird to say that because I'm really not that kind of person, but both of us, it was weird because now he tells a story that he thought he had seen me before. Mm-hmm. I'm the girl of his dreams and like his actual dreams.
It was the strangest thing.
Yeah.
I had only seen the back of the person in my dreams. And
exactly.
Then I know the moment that you turn.
And it
that
was
kind of
my
thing?
Hair at first that he like that he's like, I seen that woman before.
No, no.
Yes, for real. I felt the same way. I turned around and I was like, I know you. It was weird. Really weird.
Did you face each other and not allow your hands to touch, but like did the mirror practicing game like you would do in a theater where
Well, I am a theater teacher.
Well, exactly. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You definitely wouldn't put it past me. I have been known to do, pull out those games every once in a while. I just turned around. I just said 1, 2, 3 in my brain and I turned around and I just
kissed
said something
him.
Weird.
Oh, no.
No, I wish we should have just done it right there. But
yeah.
No, I just said, I just introduced myself and it was really weird because I just did it like randomly. I really just did like a pivot turn like in jazz and turned around and,
And then you're doing a box square and you're like, marry me.
Yeah.
Jazz hands.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
So pretty quick courtship then and then marriage?
We dated for a year.
Okay. Oh, this is so pretty long. I guess that's it. That's his University of Utah coming out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was tainting me with the University of Utah stuff. So,
And then you decided all through college that you wanted to do theater performing as a performance, or was it education and theater was sort of the discipline?
Well, I actually went to New York before I even went to BYU. I lived out there by myself for 2 years, and I performed out there.
Did the Broadway thing?
Mm-hmm, well, no. People, No, I did not do the Broadway thing, but I performed out there. So
okay. Let's talk about that. What was it?
Well, I did at the Westchester Broadway Theater, which is a good reputable theater off Broadway.
Not adjacent to Broadway, the Westchester Broadway Theater. In fact, they put Broadway in the title so that people could say years later that they performed off.
Yeah.
But close to, but not quite Broadway.
Exactly.
And that was like theater productions or singing like you do or what?
Yeah, well, no, it was musical theater. I was in a show and then I auditioned for lots of shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a great time out there, great experience. But I wanted to not be a waitress when I wasn't performing.
Right. Just
so I thought,
it's grueling as I understand it out there.
Yeah. Well, and I was like, I think I'm, I have some skills that I could probably do other things besides being a waitress. So I went back to BYU and got my degree, and my plan was to go back to New York, but other things happened.
But I went to a basketball game one time, or was it a football game?
Football.
And then I introduced myself.
But I got my theater teaching degree, which I actually loved equally as performing, and so that I never would have done that had I didn't go back to school, because I was actually just going to major in theater. And And like, you know, like the dummy I am, like, oh, theater's a great degree, you know?
Yeah.
I can do so many great things. And
really,
make so
valuable,
much money.
Really valuable. Yeah. Fortune 500s will often
exactly.
seek you out. Hey, are you a theater major? Perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Come work for our company.
We would come like own and lead our company.
Yeah. We.
Yeah.
Oh, business degree. Yeah. Pshaw. Theater
yeah.
degree is what we're looking
well,
for.
Well, and then, so then my husband convinced me to just step up to the education degree, which. Mm-hmm. You know, now I'm making big bucks with the education,
well,
but
sure,
I actually,
sure.
but actually it was a really good move for me. And, I found a huge passion that I didn't know that I had. And so then we moved to Colorado and I taught for a while and I performed out here too. And so I don't know how much you want to know.
It's no, kind of listen, story. No, it's not a boring story. It's your story, unless you consider it boring, in which case, why are we talking, right?
Right. So, yeah, and then we had kids, and I continued to teach voice lessons and
So you moved, you pivoted from being like a public teacher to
yeah.
perform, or to doing rehearsal, et cetera, within the home and doing instruction uh-huh. that way. Cool. In some ways, so much the story, right? Like those that choose to have a family, there are things that become sacrificed in order to be able to do that.
Yeah, and had we known things that we know now, we probably would have done things differently.
Like how?
I'm a crazy workaholic.
Uh-huh. And you didn't know that before?
I did, but I just thought that Mormon women just have kids and they all of a sudden become, you know, these home-like creatures that just love to do all the home thing.
Interesting.
That wasn't me. It's not me. And my husband is more. So had we kind of known, I don't know. I mean, it's weird to go back because obviously we're glad we did what we did.
Sure.
But we probably would have done things differently.
Interesting.
For sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a discussion that's been had a few times where we get painted a picture. And when you don't feel like you fit that picture, you kind of go, all right, well, maybe there's a different piece of art that I belong to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're kind of, you know, we've kind of had some negotiations about all of that. And I've, you know, had a couple of mental breakdowns and stuff like that.
Wait,
you know?
Wait a minute. Dangle that yeah. carrot. Let's talk about it if you're willing.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's,
Now, are the mental breakdowns, are we talking about like when you're, you know, struggling through doing the stay at home mom thing, or what brought that on?
Yeah.
And then how did you find
yeah,
your way
I
through
mean,
it?
I think, I don't know. I just feel like a lot of my friends are, it's kind of like the fad these days to kind of have like a mental breakdown. I don't know.
It's so not. Cool. Everyone,
it is so cool.
Everyone is doing it. Oh, you haven't had one? Poor you.
No, I think it just came to where I, you know, I had been home with the children and trying to do all my stuff on the side. And, mm-hmm. My perfectionism, my people pleasing, my, mm-hmm. my mental illnesses, my cocktail kind of all came out at once. And I kind of just didn't like, my soul was like, breaking through my body, kind of, you know, yeah. like my soul was growing out of my body and the kind of the confines that I had built around my life. Yeah. So I know it's really weird. So anyway, that's kind of what started me on this motivational singing stuff too.
All right. Hang on. You're just trying to blow past this. Let's talk. If you're willing, I would love to talk about it, because the thing is, you're not alone. There are people that listen to this. And are like, yeah, sister. And then if you just skip to the end where it's like, and then I figured it out, they go, hold on. I could use some help through all that.
No, I mean, if you follow me on Instagram and Facebook, I certainly have not figured any of it out. Well, I should say I figured some of it out.
Yeah, parts and pieces.
Yeah, but women like me don't have mental breakdowns and they don't have mental illness.
Right.
And they certainly don't love, they certainly have to love staying at home,
Right.
and everything to do with that. And so that was a really hard, it was really isolating, really lonely, even though I had a ton of friends and my husband was really supportive. It's an isolating process because I actually had never seen anybody or heard anybody, kind of walk through what I was walking through. And it, there was, I felt lonely.
Yeah.
And during that time, I kind of vowed to myself that I would walk with other women through the time that I felt lonely, that I could be a resource and I could be open about it, knowing that it's not the end of the world. I still am a very a successful and happy and contributing member of society,
Yeah.
but that I do have mental illness, and I and the kind of the open conversation around that has opened a lot of doors for healing for a lot of people, myself included, to take the stigma out of it and to just talk about what it really is and talk about what it is to be a Mormon woman with ambition and a Mormon woman that doesn't necessarily love really anything at home besides her beautiful children
Right.
and her husband. But that I have work to do in this world
Yeah.
in addition to my family and my home. And I have felt so, and as soon as I kind of came to terms with that, it seems as if God kind of started opening up paths for me.
Awesome. Let's take a break real quick. When we come back in the second block, I want to venture down that road a little bit more, if as much as you'll let me.
Yeah.
And talk about what empowered you and helped you through that journey or continues to help you. We'll do that coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. I know we're going through a lot right now. Many states are quarantining people to their homes so that they have to work remotely. One of the things that's really important is to have a computer that's functioning correctly. One with a good webcam, one that's fast so you can be productive, one that has a good quality screen because you're going to be on this all day remotely. Computer supply has been strained because manufacturing has almost stopped. At PC Laptops, we've secured a limited quantity of laptop and desktop computers that are backed with a lifetime service guarantee. They're available for you right now in limited quantity. The great thing about PC Laptops is this. Once you buy your new computer, if you have any problems or questions, we're here to take care of you. Also, to make it really easy right now, we've arranged with some banks to offer 12-month special financing. Get into PC Laptops right now, because at PC Laptops, we're here for you and we're in this together. PCLaptops.com.
Here in the second block of the Cultural Hall, take a second. You know, we've been doing some pretty great episodes recently. Would love it if you would go to wherever you have accessed this episode of the Cultural Hall and leave us a review. Now, if you want to tell us the great things or the things that you've learned, or if you just want to give us the 5 stars and be like, yeah, way to go, you're consistent. Maybe I haven't loved it, but you're consistent. Would love to hear from you in whatever capacity you seem to want to engage with us. You can do that. Probably the most popular one is if you're getting this and you are an Apple user, going right there to the Apple Podcasts and leaving us a review. That's great, but I know some of you are Google folks and pod this and pod that. So wherever you're getting this, take a second and let us know that you enjoy the show. Helps us to be visible to other people who might take great benefit from what you're listening to. Now, coming back here in the second block, Andrea, I think that the church is doing better, and this will be my my male privilege, because I don't know that I experienced this firsthand, but I think that the church is doing better at framing this perfect stay-at-home Mormon woman kind of thing, right? That we're doing at least a better job than we used to about dealing with everyone with ambition, about recognizing that there is mental illness, about framing it in a way that you don't have to be one particular way to be a member of the church.
Yeah, I think they're doing better.
Which does not mean perfect.
No, not perfect.
So as you found yourself sort of struggling through this, the perfectionism, dealing with mental illness, like, I think that it's easy to go, well, of course, the motivational singer who was able to go to Broadway, she, you know, made her, I guess I should say, off Broadway.
Yeah.
Of course, she was able to figure her way out. But maybe share with us a little bit more of the struggle for those who just feel right in the thick of it right now.
I love that question. To be honest, one of the reasons why I even ventured out, I wasn't even on social media before. I was pretty stick to myself. But the reason why I ventured out is because me as a middle-class white woman with, like you said, privilege behind me for sure. I had a hard time finding help. I had a hard time even knowing who to talk to and even knowing where to begin, because it is such a taboo topic. I remember the first time even going to my my doctor. I went to just my family doctor and just said, I am depressed and I have anxiety and I think I have ADHD. Like, just saying those words, I just exploded crying, because I didn't even know a woman could say that, and I was embarrassed. And and unfortunately, the doctor didn't receive it very well either. I think her social skills weren't the best. So that feeling then got exacerbated by going to her, even though she did help me eventually. But to be received with kindness and compassion and understanding, that's why I'm here. I feel like that's part of my purpose here on earth, is to be the, like, hey, I know how you feel. And yes, I, as a privileged woman, I felt sometimes like, if I'm feeling this way, I cannot imagine women who don't have the resources.
Right.
And who don't even, I mean, I'm educated. I know all of this stuff. I know where to find this stuff, even though it was really hard for me to find still. But, and so that's a part of, this as well, is to give women resources and give men, I mean, I'm focusing on women just because I am a woman and most of my circles are women. But it's very applicable to all of us, as God's children, that there, anyway, so yes, there was that thing where I have to start talking. I have to start talking about this because of my privilege, I think. And that's exactly why I did start talking, because I realized that my privilege, helped me have the resources more so than even people that didn't. And I'm trying to help change that.
So model that, you know, you mentioned that you said to the doctor, hey, this, I feel like, I'm depressed and that I have ADHD, and it was not received in the way that you thought it should have been, right? That compassionate. And so I guess what I hope that you could do is maybe model, share how, if we have someone in our life and they, I don't want to say confess, but they declare, you know, their depression, their anxiety, their ADHD, whatever the thing may be, like, what does compassion in that response sound like?
That's a great question too.
I'm giving you all the hard ones. The easy ones come later.
I love these questions. So compassion sounds like if somebody says, I'm feeling really depressed right now.
Cheer up. No, yeah. Cheer up. Put a smile on.
Or another bad one is, you need to go get help. Even though that's obviously, that is a good response in the end. Like, they do need to go get help. But what they want initially is for it to be received with, like Christ would receive it, where it's like, thank you so much for coming to me and showing me your heart and your vulnerability. And thank you so much for trusting me with this, and understand that this is who you are. Like, it's okay that you feel this way. In fact, a lot of people feel this way.
Yeah.
And I'm here to help you and walk you through this the best that I can. And I want to be there as a support in this for you. And I'm sorry that you're feeling this way.
Why do you think that makes such a difference in greeting it that way?
It's the shame. There's so much shame in this. There's so much shame and so much stigma. And that's what prevents people from actually even talking about it. That's prevents people from actually even acknowledging it. So you know, like it would have been easier for me to never acknowledge it and to never talk about it. Right.
Right.
Because then I could have like still looked like that perfect Mormon woman and everybody thinks it's so amazing. And it's hard to fall all the way down. It's really hard to fall all the way down, but I feel like that's our mission as Christians almost. Mm-hmm. I feel like Christ was the example of descending, and it's our responsibility also to descend so that we can have compassion and empathy for those people around us. So mm-hmm. they don't feel like we're on the mountain judging, but that we're in the trenches. Because even if you don't know what mental illness feels like, you know what it feels like to be have a stigma of some sort,
yeah.
have shame of some sort, have a secret that you're holding, have a demon, have an addiction, have you know, all of us deal with that kind of stuff. And so to think of those things while your friend or whoever is talking to you, to say, yeah, I have some pretty scary demons too, that if I actually said this to someone, that would be scary. And I would want somebody to receive it, not judging me and not trying to fix it, but simply with empathy and compassion.
Do you think the reason why we're hesitant to share is, you know, sort of permeating within the church culture is this idea that we don't share transgressions, right? You don't sort of share about the bad things you've done. And I'm not saying that mental illness is a bad thing, so let me make sure that that's very clear.
No, yeah.
But like those things that would be uncomfortable for us, or the things that would be maybe darker for us, we sort of lump them into the, we don't talk about transgressions. So we put a smile on our face and we, you know, especially women, we make sure the house is clean and everything's great. And we just got to push forward kind of that bootstrap culture.
Yeah. You know, actually, I think you hit the nail on the head at the very end, bootstrap culture. I don't think it's actually the church. I mean, I think the church, you know, I think we're kind of a reflection of our society.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do think it's a societal thing, because who wants to elect a president who has mental illness or who's admitted to ADD, right? Like,
right.
In fact, even like coming on air, you know, I'm like, do I really want to say all of this stuff? Because this, you know, people will be listening to this.
Right.
So it's really hard for all of us to, we have a culture where we pretend that we are perfect, and that illusion of perfection makes us feel so good and feeds our ego unbelievably.
Right.
And to understand that leads to isolation in the end. It leads to no connection for us. I don't know if you've ever been in the presence of someone who it keeps up that appearance of perfectionism.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to connect. Like I, you don't know where even to start.
Yeah. I meet them and then I go, yeah, not for me.
Yeah. And, you know, and all of us, I mean, I still try to protect my ego. That's just a normal human being thing, because we want people to think we're awesome. That's mm-hmm. a part of our lizard brain, right? Because
right.
that actually says I'm going to be at the top of the pack, and I'm my position is safe here, because nobody's going to leave me behind if I'm at the top of the pack, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So to actually admit that you're at the bottom of the pack for real is scary. It's scary for our ego, but it's amazing for our spirits.
I would imagine the ability to be able to say it freely, both here with me, where, I mean, we don't really know each other, but in that first declaration to the doctor, like part of those tears, I would imagine, is just the heavy burden being lifted.
100%. Mm. 100%. And to be honest, it's the one of my things that I talk about in the Woman's Joy Project is just talking, speaking our darkness, speaking it to life, because once we speak our darkness to life, it has no power over us. There's no shame about it. There's no secrecy. Lots of us actually live our lives protecting all of that stuff. And then we have to do other things to protect it and do other things to protect it, to where we become this kind of figurine that's plastered with all sorts of protections, because we had to initially protect that dart, that demon. And then we, you know, like it just keeps piling on.
Yeah.
And so what was the question? I totally lost my train of thought.
I don't know that I recall the question, actually. Okay. You spoke to it. But I will ask you, because within that you mentioned the Women's Joy Project. What's that?
So, like I said, when my darkest time, or maybe I didn't say that. In my darkest time, I felt like I wanted to walk with other women in this path. Mm-hmm. And so I started teaching mindfulness classes, meditation classes in my home, and just inviting anybody and everybody who wanted to come. And those still happen. And then I started kind of putting out my story on social media and just being pretty honest and vulnerable. And then I started doing the concerts where I just really tell my story and not, in just a real, really real way. And then I sing really cool songs and then talk some more real stuff and then sing some amazing songs. Because a part of descending also is that I don't really have anything to prove anymore. And so I can actually own my strengths in a way that I've never owned my strengths before, that God has given me this amazing voice. And I had no idea why. None of it made sense, especially when I was in that, that trying to hustle around everybody's lives and my family to make everybody's lives perfect. And then I didn't know where my superpowers or super talents fit. So all of a sudden it kind of made sense. I was thinking, what could I use? What tools could I use to get this message out that I have? And I was like, oh, singing. Oh yeah.
I'm a singer.
So it kind of all came together where there was something that I had to hide my singing too, because it was like, I didn't want anybody to feel bad that I was a great singer, and I didn't want.
Yeah.
So there's a downplaying that happens too when we hide. That now owning both my really dark demons and owning my amazing superpowers has culminated in a pretty special thing, I think.
And I want to talk about that special thing. And also, I want to play a little bit of you singing. So we'll take a quick break and we'll play a little bit of that. And we'll come back in the third block of the Cultural Hall. Hey, it's me, Richie T. I want to take a second and talk to you about best DJ in Utah. Or I should really say right now, best guy who cleans out his carport and best guy who cleans out his storage unit and best guy who cleans out his carpenter studio and has done a lot of episodes of the Cultural Hall. Not a lot of DJing happening right now, as you can imagine. With the quarantine, it is the socially responsible thing to do. But I will promise you this. I bring the party. As soon as this is lifted, as soon as these rainy clouds of self-quarantine are gone, I will bring the party. Now, you're going to have a work party? Great. You're going to have a church party? I do the church parties, too. You're going to have a wedding or special day, or maybe you just want to have a post-corona party. I would love to be that DJ for that party. You can hit me up. You can get a quote simple and easy at bestdjinutah.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
While tyrants tremble in their fear and hear their death now ringing, while friends rejoice both far and near, how can I keep from singing? In prison cell or dungeon vile, my thoughts to them are winging. When friends by shame are undefined, how can I keep from singing? From singing. From singing.
Coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall, that music that you just heard was our fantastic guest singing How Can I Keep From Singing? There's some pretty awesome lyrics to that. You want to dive in on those a little bit?
Yeah. That song is pretty symbolic of my journey. That song kind of has come in and out of my life. And there was a time in my life where I stopped singing altogether.
Really?
Yeah. It was pretty painful because it had been all of who I was for so long. It was my identity. And then I became a mom, and all of a sudden it was nowhere to be found. And so I would go to musicals and I would cry the whole time, and I would be angry because that was no longer a part of my life. And I kind of stopped singing as like a protest to myself, maybe. I don't know.
Almost because it became too painful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It became painful. It also had so much, and if any of their singers out there will understand this, or any artists really, when you are good at something as from a young child, it becomes who you are. You don't really know yourself without it.
Yeah. That's the basketball kid. That's the piano girl.
Yeah. So anything, I guess, even outside the arts, and you take a ton of lessons and you get all these lessons from people who are awesome that teach you how to sing the right way. And then somebody else teaches you how to sing the right way. And then you go to college and you're told how to do your art the right way and the right way. And then in the end, I didn't even know how I liked to sing or what I wanted to sing or who I was as an artist at all. I didn't even realize I was an artist, because at the end of all my training, I had become a great copycat of many artists. And so that becomes a little schizophrenic when you're an adult and you're trying to find your soul, and your soul's kind of connected to your art. So the whole thing kind of went together, and I just stopped because I was like, it's too much of mental gymnastics for me to actually, you know, even go there.
But interesting though, to then come out on the other side, because so many times I've heard people, you know, share similar things, right? With whether they paint or whether they play an instrument or something like that. Or even I listened to an interview recently about a stand-up comedian, and this idea of, and you'll forgive the pun, but it applies completely, of finding your own voice.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why it seems pretty, happenstance is not the right word. We all know that there's obviously a reason for all of this. But that's why this song is so powerful for me, because it symbolizes my voice in my singing voice, but also my voice in what I have learned and what my soul has learned. And how can I keep from doing this? When I feel so compelled, and when it is part, and my soul is just longing to express itself.
Yeah.
So the song is pretty, pretty powerful in my life, and I would sing it for something, and then it would hide away itself for a long time. And then I would hear it on the radio or something, and it would really strike a chord in me again, because I just knew that I was supposed to sing. And I was supposed to share my voice. And just like all of us. And I think any listeners out there know exactly what their singing is. Mm-hmm. And each one of us have our own kind of, you know, how can I keep from singing? How can I keep from painting? How can I keep from whatever it is that you're here on this earth for? God is going to keep nagging, and your soul is going to keep coming to the surface until you figure out how it is you're supposed to share, what it is you're supposed to share with the world.
Would you say then that feeling of unrest would be a gift from God?
Oh yes, 100%, 100%. Because it's so uncomfortable that you want to then go, you know, like investigate all of the nooks and crannies of your soul that feel unrestful, and figure out how to bring them at rest. And our souls won't be at rest until we kind of dig out all of our demons and dig out all of our superpowers and dig out all of those songs that we're supposed to be singing and share them with the world in a very, there's just something when you find it, it's I'm on God's errand at this point, that I'm using what was already put inside of me and the unrest that I felt and the painful parts of my life to help others.
It's interesting as you talk about finding that voice, that it also almost becomes, knowing your calling. You hear that with a lot of people who aren't artistic, right? Like, I was called to this by God. I'm a teacher or I'm a firefighter, whatever they find as they themselves, aside from the arts, have sort of broken down and found what it was that they felt like God was calling them to. It's an interesting path for sure to hear and to trod and to continue to be trotting. Walking?
Yeah, sure.
The thing is. Yeah. As you were struggling, do you think that your kids recognized it?
Well, I'm an actress, so I acted for a long time. I acted for a long time, but that's when the breakdown happened, is that there's only so many years that you can act before your soul just says, I've had enough. And so now I want it to be an open conversation. My kids are still a little bit too young for the conversation, but I know that, anxiety and ADD and depression are very genetic. Mm-hmm. And so it's important for us as parents and us as humans that we talk about it, because our kids probably, if we have it or we have siblings or whoever that have mental illness, that there's a good chance that our children may have it.
Yeah.
And so it's an open conversation that, that my kids know that, I struggle with certain things and I use it in appropriate kid language.
Sure.
And that it's okay, that it's actually okay to struggle and it's actually okay to be sad sometimes. And it's actually okay to have anxiety. Mm-hmm. And the more that we say it's okay, the more that the less power it has over us. Mm. I have a daughter that has anxiety and, we go to the doctors and she just flips out. And now we just say, it's a joke. And I say, hey, did you bring your anxiety today? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, what is she wearing today? Is she wearing is she wearing her sparkly perfect dress that makes her look great at the doctor, whatever to where she understands that it's not a big deal. Like it just, it's the anxiety is going to always be with her. Right. So it's like, might as well befriend it and dress it and hold its hand and walk it to the doctors and acknowledge that it's there and make jokes so that it just doesn't have the power that it usually has over us.
How do you think that changes it for her than maybe what you had either growing up or into adulthood?
Well, I think the most detrimental part of mental illness or anxiety, especially, is the shoving it down and the denying it and the judging it. So I'd have anxiety and then I would judge myself for it, which would make me doubly hurt and doubly upset. And then it would just be just a storm of shame and judgment of the shame and then more shame. And where really it's just anxiety, right? It's a very genetic thing in my family and it's a very normal thing in my family. So you just say, I have anxiety and especially, I have anxiety around the doctors and you just befriend it. And so sometimes I'm like, oh, hey, anxiety, you're here with me today. It's
okay,
great to
there,
be your
pal.
Best friend through life. You've helped me through a lot because anxiety, can help us, can keep us safe because we're always looking for the next thing that's going to, harm us. But usually it just causes us pain because our minds just repeat, just on repetition of all the fearful and harmful or the fearful things in our brain. So yeah. I've just befriended the anxiety. It doesn't cure it, but it makes it so much more manageable. And our family talks about it really openly so that it doesn't have power over us.
It's interesting. So I'm not saying my therapist, but my therapist has related it in a way that You know, like anxiety or fear or you know, depression, all those things can be like a passenger in a car in the passenger seat, like you're driving a car and they're there in the, you know, the front passenger seat. And that oftentimes the way that it rears itself is that it's grabbing the steering wheel and, you know, taking us off the road or, you know, into those dangerous places. And, you know, he relates it in such a way that it's like, you know what, you're probably never going to get that person out of, you know, out of the passenger seat, but you can be the one in charge and driving that car and pointing it in the direction and be able to have that person or that, you know, that thing in the car with you. And for whatever reason, that you know, the idea of fear or anxiety or depression, grabbing the steering wheel and that I can have something to do with it, like if I was, you know, driving a car, that that sort of visualization has helped me quite
a bit. I like that. And that we don't have to fear it, that it actually can be a, like a nice little member of our family.
Well, actually,
to be honest, I mean, if, had I not been honest about any of this stuff, I wouldn't be able to help people. Right.
Yeah.
So there is a beauty in our in owning it all, because we can actually have empathy for people and we can actually say, oh, man, I struggle with that, too. And so actually these things that were before, you know, quote unquote bad now have become a really important part of my life and a very maybe one of my strengths, to be honest, because I am more empathetic. And, you know, my adult ADD makes me a little bit cuckoo and a little bit unique and a little bit weird, which I love. You know, I think outside the box. I have really great ideas, and all of these things have actually become my strengths now that I have owned them and kind of just integrated them into my life.
Almost in a way, you know, the fulfillment of the weak things to become strong that we read of in
100%.
The scriptures.
Yeah. That is 100% what that scripture means.
Yeah.
And like I said, mine is my demons happen to be some mental illness and, you know, the effects of that, but it's the same thing with addictions. It's the same thing with, anything in your family history or anything that you've done in the past can actually turn into a strength because especially if we bring it out in the open and we talk about it and you talk about your healing process through it, 100% our demons can become our strengths. And I think that that's what that scripture means.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned it earlier, and then the remaining time that we have, I want to talk a little bit about the mindfulness and the motivational part of what you do now. Mindfulness seems to be such a buzzword. We're so buzzy.
Yeah, it sure is.
Oh,
I'm
just being mindful. I'm being mindful and intentional. I'm being,
yes,
you know.
Exactly.
So break down what that means to you, and then maybe how we could be a little bit more mindful as you see it.
Yeah. I mean, these are kind of crazy times these days. And people,
I don't know what you're talking about as far as that goes.
People with mental illness, it makes it even harder.
Yeah.
It kind of, it just exacerbates what we already have going on.
Mm-hmm.
So mindfulness is, other words for it are living in the present, living in the now, the here and now. And what it is that our brains are conditioned to constantly be looping the past or obsessed about the future. And it's a beautiful part of our brain. It's our most primitive part that keeps us alive, that if we were chased by a bear, we would be really equipped to hurry and run really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that part of our brain is kind of on overdrive all day because it's keeping our human being alive, which we're, you know, we're grateful for. The problem in modern society is that any sort of any indication of harm or any indication of uncomfortableness, our brain is constantly looping messages, fear messages, and worry messages. So most of our brains are in the past and in the future. And that causes us a lot of pain, actually. So what we do is we say, thank you, brain, for keeping us safe. And thank you for totally looping about the most inane thing that you possibly could find in my day today and just loop it and loop it and loop it. I'm so grateful. However, that's causing me pain right now. So I am going to breathe and I'm going to, so everybody breathe. And I want you to look at what's right here and right now, because you'll actually find that nothing is bad going on right here and right now. Hmm. It can't be, because everything that's happening is happening. So I want you to just focus on what you see. There's some good exercises where if you feel that lizard brain is what I call it, or primitive brain going on overdrive, mm-hmm. you pause, you breathe, and you say 5 things that you see, 4 things that you smell, 3 things that you hear, 1 thing that you feel.
Wait, we forgot 2.
I know. Oh, did I? Oh, 2. And what sense did I miss?
Let's see. 5 things that you see, 4 things that you hear. Oh, we got taste. Is there a taste in
taste.
There?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sure. Sure. Taste.
Oh, sure.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, sure. Eat something. And I just, that'll help
you. Oh, just, you know, like, just be conscious of what you taste in your mouth.
Hmm.
Because that gets us here, because we're here, and joy and peace can only happen when we are here. We can't feel peace and joy in the future. We can't feel peace and joy in the past, because the past is just a memory and the future is just anticipation. So right here is where we can feel peace and joy. That's why prayer is really helpful. That's why reading the scriptures is really helpful. That's why being with the people you love, it brings us back to where we are, like here. And that's where God lives. That's where connection lives with each other and ourselves. And, but as humans, you know, we're always like, well, why, you know, like, it's so hard. And it is hard. I'm like the worst about living in the present.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you know me in my real life, like I'm an absolute, you know, like stress case all day. So living in the present is painful for me too,
mm-hmm.
but it's the only place I can find peace.
Hmm.
So when I am really struggling, I just pause and I breathe and I notice whatever's going on. So my children are there usually,
mm-hmm.
and I notice their freckles and I notice how grateful I am that they're in my life. And I notice that I'm sitting on a really comfortable chair and in a warm home and in a beautiful country that I'm free to do, you know, so it just keeps on going on, because in the moment, everything's right. Because if you're breathing, there's more right than wrong with you. And we just have to slow down enough to actually understand that. Our brains are constantly going to be telling us that we need to do more. We need more in our lives. We need to buy more. We need to be more as humans. And this moment is not enough. I've got to be, you know, thinking 3 years in advance of when I'm going to be the next superstar or whatever.
Right.
But all that just leads us to a lot of pain and a lot of anxiety and a lot of unhappiness. But if we can just slow down and understand that what we have right here, right now is enough, we will start feeling peace in our life.
It's a tremendous lesson at any time, but certainly with current events going on, to take an opportunity and be like, okay.
Yeah.
How am I right now? I mean, it is so cumbersome and overwhelming. You know, before we turned on the microphones and we were talking about, you know, the news and the radio and, you know, you go to any store and you see what's going on, and it can so very quickly become overwhelming and for some people paralyzing.
Yes, for sure.
So to just take that moment and recognize all that you have in that moment. That's
and understand
remarkable.
That your brain is not going to want to do that.
Yeah.
So lots of people are like, I've tried all day. And I'm like, yeah, your brain is not going to want to do that. It's not a natural thing for our brain.
Yeah.
But some people give me, like, there's like some advice of like, when you go to when you're at a stoplight, make that be your mindfulness reminder to stop and breathe and just have little pings throughout your day of, you know, every time I brush my teeth, I'm going to focus on the water and what I hear in the water and the smell of the toothpaste and how it feels on my teeth and whatever it is, to just bring you back to understand that what we have right here is all we need to be happy as humans.
Hmm. It sounds a little woo-woo, but having the opportunity to actually practice it, life-changing.
Huge, huge.
Hmm.
Yeah.
There's 3 questions that we ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall, Andrea, and I'm going to ask those of you right now. The first question is, do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
I do. I'm the choir director.
For the whole ward. We're not talking primary. We're talking the ward.
No, the ward choir director, yeah.
Now, do you do full-on presentations? Like, are you the extra choir director?
No, I am the really mediocre choir director. I'm one of those. I'm the least amount of work kind of choir director.
Okay.
However, it's kind of karma because I'm not a huge choir person. In every ward, you know, I'm a singer, and I always give a disclaimer like, oh, I'm so sorry. I want to sing in your choir. I just, my Sundays are really sacred to me that I don't want to do one more meeting, whatever.
Right.
So of course, this is my karma that now I have the choir, that I have this calling.
Well, if you just do it right one time, they won't call you to do it again.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe I should step up my game then.
Yeah. Or if you just get excommunicated, that's another way out of your calling.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I recommend just doing it perfect the first time though.
Okay. Yeah.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either make one up or pick one that exists, what would you pick?
Oh, I loved teaching the teenagers Sunday school.
What age are we talking about? What age?
I like the ages of like 13 to 18.
Oh, nice. So that kind of awkward, but then also I'm almost an adult.
Yes, 100%. Totally awkward and hilarious. And for some reason, I get a lot of energy and I have a lot of fun with that age.
And probably can really relate to that age, which is no sort of slight, but with like kind of the ADHD, you know what I'm
100%,
saying?
100%.
What are we doing? Are we doing this? Yeah, you bet. And now this thing.
I always describe my brain as like a middle school classroom. Mm-hmm. So if I can actually be in a middle school classroom, it takes the pressure away from my brain to actually, you know, be normal brain. And then I can actually, my circumstances can be a middle school classroom. So yeah, that's probably why I like it.
Yeah, sure. It calms it down. Like they say, for those folks that deal with like ADHD or whatever, like having a cup of coffee or a considerable amount of caffeine, where with most people, it would be like, oh my gosh, I'm so charging. For everybody that struggles with that, they're like, oh no, peace, got it, focus, cool.
100%. As soon as I walk into a middle school classroom, I'm like,
I love it. The last question that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall, and you can interpret this however you would like, but what is your favorite part of your faith?
My faith. So I'm in love with the life of Jesus and the teachings of Jesus. And I love the opportunity that I have to go to church every week and to practice the teachings of Jesus in this awesome congregation of people who are my different age, my different, you know, they think differently than I do. They are, you know, they come from different backgrounds. That is my favorite part of church, is to be able to learn how to love my congregation the way that Jesus loves and have them love me, learn how to love me that way. And they love my children that way. And I love their children that way. And I get to serve them in that way. For me, that is why I love my faith.
Mm, I love that. A great conversation between two people who didn't know each other at the start.
And
are now best friends. Divided by the Rocky Mountains.
That's right. This was so fun. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. I hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the cultural hall show. Ow!